Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everybody. Today, the FDA is warning people about the popular new practice of personal genetic testing. They're concerned that people are using their results to make bad medical decisions. We'll explain. WNYC's Kathleen Horan today on concluding her series In Harm's Way, which profiled every child shot and killed in New York City over the last year, in a year when child homicides have drastically declined, and how to protect your iPhone from holiday season theft on the streets of New York, other than pretending it's a BlackBerry. But first, we'll talk about the Iran deal with Christian Amanpour, chief international correspondent for CNN and global affairs anchor for ABC, who, among other things, has a blog post on CNN.com on a negotiated deal with Iran as an alternative to war. Thanks for doing this, Christian. Welcome back to WNYC.
Wonderful to be back with you, Brian.
And your blog post reminds us that this deal is not historic in the sense of being unprecedented. Iran froze its nuclear program for 2 years a decade ago in a deal with the Bush administration. Can you remind us about that deal?
Yes, indeed. Well, there was a similar set of negotiations between Iran and the world powers, eager to put the brakes on Iran's nuclear program back then. The exact same arguments were being talked about then as are being talked about a decade or more later. And at that time, there was the reformist government of President Mohammad Khatami. His chief nuclear negotiator was Hassan Rouhani, who is now the president of Iran. And they decided, as a measure of goodwill, to freeze the program, and they did so for 2 years. So that was a pretty extraordinary situation. It all came a cropper when it was clear that President Bush and his administration had rejected an offer from Khatami to fully have conclusive negotiations over all sorts of issues, including the nuclear. And then, of course, Ahmadinejad became president, and that put paid to any kind of negotiations because of his deliberately combative stance.
And you wrote that Rouhani now has done what many considered impossible, get the supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, and even the Republican Guard to go along with this interim deal. So why did they, if this is on one level humiliating capitulation to the great Satan, the United States, because sanctions brought them to their knees?
Well, this is where you have to be very careful about what sanctions have done. First and foremost, this is not a capitulation, and that is the actual problem as far as Israel is concerned and those in Congress. They want to see Iran capitulate, cry uncle, surrender its nuclear program. Iran has stated and made clear that it will not, even under the most crippling sanctions regime ever imposed, which is what has happened to Iran. So, yes, the sanctions have hurt. They have hurt ordinary Iranian people, and they have definitely hurt the Iranian economy. Yes, the regime wants the sanctions lifted, but no, not at the price of giving up their nuclear program. This interim deal recognizes that by the West. So what they're trying to do is get the very best deal possible to delay any opportunity for Iran to so-called break out towards a military program, and to try to buy time and more trust and more goodwill to hammer out a final and comprehensive deal, which will require much bigger gives from all sides, from both the United States and Iran. So the idea is to finally put Iran's nuclear program with constraints that everyone can live with, and to make sure that it's peaceful. And that is what the end game is. The end game is not, and I spoke yesterday to the Deputy National Security Advisor of the United States, the end game does not envision Iran giving up enrichment or giving up its nuclear program. And everybody has to be clear about this, because there's a lot of mischievous, rhetorical hanky-panky being played right now from all different sides of the aisle, depending on whether they agree with this deal or not.
Listeners, if you have questions about the Iran-U.S. interim nuclear deal, Christian Amanpour from CNN and ABC News is here, and she can take your questions. We're not going to make this a whole big call in with, you know, long speeches about your opinions about it. You can say briefly what you think. And Christiana is with us till about 10:15. So brief statement, brief question, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. You want to go a little further, Christiana, into that last idea, because I think a lot of the opponents find that the most troubling thing, not only to live with in the interim agreement, but for a potential permanent deal down the road, and that is allowing Iran even to have the right to enrich uranium at all for peaceful purposes, to have a nuclear power program at all, because in theory, if they wanted to, in secret, hiding it from the world, they could convert it to a nuclear weapons program. Is that the toughest nut for 6 months from now?
I think it's going to be the toughest nut. And, you know, if this six-month interim deal was hard to get signed, you can be sure that the next leg is going to be even harder. Look, what the opponents say is that Iran, if it insists and if everybody absolutely wants, can have a nuclear program, but not one in which it's able to enrich any uranium domestically. It can have a peaceful civil nuclear program as long as it agrees to buy its enriched uranium for that program from outside. That's what the opponents of this deal and the opponents of the Iranian nuclear program say. The others are more realistic and say, look, where we were afraid, basically, they say, we have been afraid of Iran's nuclear program for now 20 years. What we said was unacceptable 10 years ago is now what Iran is doing. So in other words, the goalposts have moved so far, even under massive international sanctions, that certainly the Obama administration, certainly the Europeans, have concluded that nothing is going to stop Iran from enriching. So what is the next alternative? Do you have a massive war where you attempt to completely obliterate its nuclear program in every single corner of the country, in every single aspect, in every bunker, in every facility? Nobody thinks that's possible. Or do you have a negotiated settlement whereby you absolutely negotiate full transparency, full verification, fully demarcated lines as to how much they're allowed to enrich, a real deal over the Iraq potential plutonium plant, the heavy water plant, which has been a big issue even in this interim deal. What happens to that? All these things are to be negotiated. And if they can be negotiated, then here's a bitter pill that the West has to suffer, which is also what the U.S. has to swallow, and that is relieving all sanctions. That is the only way a full deal is going to happen.
Now,
and if the deal doesn't happen, Iran will continue to enrich without the international community being involved in it.
Right. But on the transparency that you mentioned, the critics of this deal say it does not include every nuclear facility. And one that keeps getting mentioned is something that I'm not familiar with called the Parchin military base, where critics say the real weaponizing of uranium is taking place. And that alone makes this deal a fraud or at best impossible to verify. Are you familiar with Parchin?
Brian, of course I am. Parchin is a military facility in Iran. And it is true that critics and maybe even the IAEA, in fact, definitely even the IAEA, the UN Inspection Agency, believe that perhaps some attempt at a military dimension was attempted, but this is years ago, and Iran has not given them access to that yet. Now, I spoke to the IAEA Director General, who is pretty tough on Iran, one of the toughest IAEA Director Generals in a generation. He has told me that he has noticed a significant and meaningful political shift in Iran, because, Brian, all this comes down to political intention in Iran. So he's noticed a political shift in which he says that there is significant movement towards stepped-up cooperation from the Iranians, and that they have not expanded their nuclear program, certainly since Rouhani was elected and since the whole idea of these negotiations was raised. Again, you know, nobody can know for sure, and definitely, you know, one wants to know, and inspectors want to know, and foreign governments want to know, are there any military applications? As yet, the United States National Intelligence Estimate has not detected any move or any recent move by Iran towards a military objective in its nuclear program. So that's, I mean, those are the facts according to the United States. The real issue is here, as Iranians keep saying, and as the Israelis understand and the U.S. understands and the other intelligence officials understand, Iran has mastered the cycle. The science is in the heads of the scientists. It has not only got the information in its scientific brain, but it has also brought its program way beyond the United States, Israel, the United Nations, Europe, and all the other countries said would ever be acceptable. These red lines have been crossed. Not the military red line, but all the other red lines have been crossed, despite the heaviest, most crippling sanctions regime ever imposed on any country. So the real question is, what is the alternative and how do we make sure that Iran never, ever pursues a military capability? And that is what these negotiations are all about.
Karen in White Plains, you're on WNYC with Christiane Amanpour. Hi, Karen.
Hi, good morning, Brian. Full disclosure before my question, I happen to agreement is a disaster of epic proportions along the line of Munich before World War II. I have zero confidence in the ability of the United States or the world to detect when and if Iran does break out and go nuclear. I believe that just like we did not detect with North Korea, the same will likely happen with Iran. That said, I have a question for Christian. We are well-versed in the practice in the Middle East of leaders and rulers saying one thing to the West to pacify us and another thing to their constituents at home. So my question to Christian is, what does she think of the fact that after this accord was reached, Rouhani went home to Iran and announced to jubilation and celebration in Iran that this constituted recognition by the world of Iran's right to enrich uranium? And does
all
that
right.
not
okay.
speak to Iran's true intention?
Karen got it.
All right. So here's the thing. First of all, it wasn't Rouhani because he is the president and he was not the negotiator. Look,
it was the foreign minister, right?
Correct, the foreign minister. Rouhani and the leaders did say that the world has recognized our right to a nuclear program and to enrich. At the same time, the United States has been saying that no, there is no implicit right to enrich. Both of these are rhetorical and semantic games. You have to understand this, caller. They are rhetorical and semantic games. Iran is enriching. It is enriching today. It is enriching under the interim deal. It will enrich under the expected and envisaged permanent deal. Iran will continue to enrich, even if there is no deal reached, but that will be in violation of UN resolutions. Iran is enriching. The question is the level at which it's enriching. So right now, the level has been brought right down. That is the aim for the permanent negotiations, to bring the level of enrichment down to where it's not dangerous and where it cannot easily be transferred or further enriched into weapons-grade enrichment.
And I think we don't need to go round and round on it, but I think that the way Karen framed it probably pretty well articulates the position that most of the opponents of this deal are going to remain in, even as negotiations on a permanent deal take place. And that is that since you can never really detect whether Iran is secretly pursuing nuclear weapons.
Okay, that's
the
not
only
true,
thing
for
you
start,
well,
the,
okay,
Brian,
but
that
then
is not true.
Okay,
that
then
is,
the,
that is scientifically and politically and factually wrong. The lady brought up North Korea. You know how we all knew that North Korea was going to do what it did? Because it kicked out the IAEA inspectors and announced that it would withdraw from the international agreement, and then it went on to produce its plutonium nuclear devices. So yes, you're right. If Iran is on the verge of breakout and wants to pursue a nuclear weapon, you will likely have indicators of such. They will kick out all the current inspectors, all the cameras, the whole regime. You will have certain indicators as to that happening. But the fact still would remain that there's not a whole lot you can do about it. Why do you think the United States is not taking a tougher line with North Korea? Because North Korea has devices. So the the effort here is to prevent Iran from doing that. And the only way to do this, the only way that the world has discovered to do this, is to try to have a negotiated settlement.
And you at least get
a massive war.
And you at least get them on the record saying to their own people as well as to the world, if there is a deal, we are not in the business of making nuclear weapons.
That's right.
Which is something in itself, again, unless they're just trying to perpetrate a complete fraud on everybody.
Right.
You know,
the whole point is, of course, nobody trusts them. That's what this is all about, to have the maximum amount of verification,
right,
the maximum amount of transparency.
One more call. Waji on Long Island. You're on WNYC from, I think, a completely different point of view as our last caller. Hello, Waji.
Yes, Brian. Thank you, Cristiano. I think you're one of the very few educated news persons out there. I'm going to play a devil's advocate. I'm an Arab American, and I put myself in Iran's shoes since the revolution back in the 70s and since the embassy crisis. The U.S. and Israel have been threatening Iran. And looking at the countries around Iran, they all have been invaded by the U.S. So why can't Iran defend itself rightfully, whether having nuclear military for a military purpose or a peaceful purpose? Why can't they have a military program to defend themselves? Thank you.
All right.
Christian, on the content, and also I'd be curious to hear your analysis of how widespread that opinion is within the Iranian population.
Within the Iranian population, it is not widespread. The misnomer is that the Iranian population wants a nuclear weapon. You have to make a difference between nuclear weapon and peaceful nuclear program. The Iranian population does not want to have a nuclear weapon. The Iranian population does feel that it's its right to have a peaceful nuclear program. How to make sure it keeps peaceful is the challenge for the international community and for Iran as well. The question that the question suggested that why should Iran not have a nuclear weapon? Well, first of all, it said it is not pursuing a nuclear weapon, but why should it not? Because it would make Iran much less safe. It would make the rest of the region much less safe, and it would start a nuclear arms race. Plus, what really worries Israel, and I have spoken to Mossad leaders and all sorts of former and current top intelligence and security members of the Israeli establishment, they know perfectly well that they have a massive retaliatory capacity against any attack from any other country. And they said to me that we should not be, you know, worried about this kind of thing from an existential point of view. We have to understand that we have the strength to respond, and Israel can defend itself.
Well, respond. So, you don't want to have to respond to a nuclear attack that's already taken place, right?
Yeah, but Brian, the scientists and the politicians and the historians, they don't believe that it's possible that there can be this kind of attack. Plus, Iran has made it clear over and over again that it is not seeking to attack Israel in any formal fashion. And this is the one thing, I think, that is a very, very prominent fear for Israelis and for American Jews and for friends of Israel all over the world, that the terrible rhetoric that came out of Iran from President Ahmadinejad over the last 8 years cemented this idea in people's minds that was Iranian policy. Certainly on their stated, when they're asked in interviews and when they're asked, you know, in speeches and when they're asked in bilateral meetings with other world leaders, they say that is not our policy, and what Ahmadinejad was not reflecting Iranian policy in terms of Israel.
Christian Amanpour, Chief International Correspondent for CNN and contributing global affairs anchor for ABC News. I know you got to go. Thank you for giving us so much time today and talking about this massively important deal.
Well,
thank you.
You can see, Brian, how very fraught this is going to be going forward. And one of the commentators said that both the Iranian president and the U.S. president should be commended for making it through to this intermediate deal, despite the noise on all sides. It's a very, very fraught issue, but many believe it could be the defining issue of this half of the 21st century.
Indeed, and I hope you'll come back on and talk about it again as these permanent negotiations take place. Thanks, Christian.
I certainly will.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, President Obama's promise that the Obamacare website would be working well for most people by the end of November. It's November 26th. We'll see how it's going.